Filmmaker Brian Fogel couldn't have known that when he decided to make a documentary about doping and bicycle racing, he would play an important role in exposing the biggest doping scandal known to sports history, an intricate scheme involving dirty urine that's alleged to have been orchestrated and sanctioned by the Russian government. His new award-winning documentary called Icarus follows him and a Russian whistleblower as the scandal unfolds. It opens today at the IFC Center, also launches today on Netflix, and I'm very pleased it has brought Brian Fogel to our show. Hello.
Thanks for having me.
You couldn't have imagined that your film would become a geopolitical thriller when you began it. What did you think you were going to be making a movie about?
Well, I initially thought I was going to be making a movie exploring the fallacy of the anti-doping system, and that was based on the fact that Lance Armstrong, to this day, has still managed to evade positive detection. The guy had gotten through 500 anti-doping controls clean. The only way they get him is actually through a criminal investigation where he finally confesses. Yet on a world platform, it's looked like that he had been caught when, in fact, the system to catch him had failed miserably, so I decided that I was going to set out on a supersize me journey where I'd dope myself. I'd find.
Because you are a bicyclist as well, an amateur racer?
Yeah, I'm a passionate amateur cyclist. Had followed Armstrong my whole life and the sport, and thought cycling would be a conduit, a way in for me to tell this bigger story of what I saw as the total failure of anti-doping.
Were you at all concerned for your health because you were taking these drugs to make a point?
Well, that's interesting, and that goes into kind of what is being presented in society. So on one level, it's being presented as doping, and doping is bad. And that is being presented to children and, of course, you know, anybody in professional sport that is subjected to testing. On the other side of this is pretty much everything that I was taking is being sold as anti-aging and the fountain of youth. So once I kind of understood that what I had led to be, you know, had been led to believe was this doping was actually the same thing that, you know, everybody's paying thousands of dollars for in anti-aging, I became less scared of what I'd be injecting into myself and more scared about flying off a mountain going 70 miles an hour on my bicycle.
So it was possible to legally obtain the HCG and testosterone that you would want to use here?
Yes, I was using HGH, HCG, testosterone, DHEA, thyroid, all sorts of different vitamin injections, and also erythropoietin, EPO. Outside of the EPO, I was able to obtain everything easily with a prescription. The EPO, I had to go through a back channel to get.
No, you had already competed in the hot route, the bicycle race for amateurs. Do professionals race in that as well?
It's a race, a seven-day race through the French Alps, and they basically promoted as the hardest amateur cycling race in the world. It's basically if you were to take the seven hardest days of a Tour de France, put them all together, and put them into 1 week, and you get about 500 masochists from around the world showing up to do this. And so this was going to be my testing ground, and I did it 2 years.
Mm. The first one without the drugs, the second one with the drugs.
That's right.
Were you surprised that, I don't know how much I should give away in this conversation, but were you surprised that you actually wound up doing worse when you were pumped up?
You know, it was a little bit of a misnomer because we didn't have the time cinematically to really get into that. But the first year, actually, while I got 14th, I walked out of it, and actually, I didn't walk out of it. I couldn't walk for about 3 weeks after that race. I had Achilles tendonitis, hip dysplasia. I was a wreck and had destroyed myself. The second year, while I technically didn't do as well, I had a mechanical, I had a crash, I had a flat tire, and I probably would have certainly placed better, But physically, how my body felt is I got through that seventh day and I could have went on for 8 days, 9 days, 10 days, 11 days. And not only was I walking at the end of that event, I mean, I could have ran a marathon. So to me, how my body felt physically was night and day between the 2 years.
So if you were a more serious cyclist, you could have continued doing this, perhaps done a lot better the next year. How did you get connected to Grigory Rodchenkov, the former director of a Moscow laboratory called the Anti-Doping Center?
Well, Grigory at the time was running what was the third largest anti-doping lab in the world. It was the Moscow laboratory.
This is meant to catch people who are doping.
Yes. So every country, the major countries in the world, have to, in order to compete in world events, have to create their own anti-doping agencies. So like in the United States, we have USADA, U.S. Anti-Doping Agency. In Russia, it's RUSADA, Russian Anti-Doping Agency. Well, the difference is that the Russian system, while conforming to international code, the entire system was put in place to allow Russian athletes to dope while the state, while the ministry, would cover up their positives. So it was just a shell operation. It appeared to be anti-doping, but what it really was anti-doping. And Grigory was running the Moscow laboratory at the time, which had overseen the testing for all of the Sochi Olympics, all international competitions of all sports and athletes coming into Russia, and all Russian athletes under the sports program, the ministry, which we need to remember that in Russia, sport is not privatized like it is in the U.S. In Russia, all the athletes competing are actually paid by the Russian government to be athletes for the national team.
So when you got in touch with them, you said you wanted to use steroids, all of these different drugs. Shouldn't he have been a bit wary of you?
Absolutely, he should have been wary of me. If he had been doing his job under WADA code, as he should have been, I mean, the easy answer would have been a flat-out no. However, we spoke over months and months. I actually go to meet him in Oregon, which isn't in the film, and I didn't bring my camera. And I discussed
with him. But you also talked to him over Skype.
Yeah, and talked to him over Skype. And I said, look, I'm an amateur cyclist, but I'm a filmmaker. And I really want to see if what Lance had done is still possible. I want to explore the anti-doping system. And Grigory, as lab director, immediately starts telling me, yes, it's very easy to get around the testing, and the anti-doping system doesn't work, and I'll show you. And that was pretty startling to me, coming from a guy who just did all the testing at the Olympics and is running the Moscow laboratory. But, you know, to me, that was an incredible hook for a film, and we had a trust, and for many reasons, some I just still are unfathomable, he agreed to help me.
Well, initially, he comes across as somebody who you might be a bit suspicious of, but we come to like this man a lot during the film. He's a very likable man.
Well, that's the amazing thing about him. I mean, he is yin and yang. I mean, he is venom and anti-venom. I mean, you cannot help but love this person, yet he has been doing and involved in some just, you know, kind of spectacular wrongdoing during the course of his entire career. Yet he's just this thoroughly lovable character, and that was something so important to me as the filmmaker to present who this person is as a human being.
So we can't go into all the details of what your plans for passing the drug tests after the race, but was it pretty much similar to what the Russians had been doing during the Sochi Olympics?
Well, no, and that's the incredible fraud of it also. So what I was doing and what most athletes that have been trying to get around drug testing were doing is essentially figuring out a protocol, which is when you can take something, when you can't take something, how long it's going to wash out of your body, when will you be clean, what dosage can you take, and basically being able to to get yourself under the legal limits, but at the legal limits, and then figuring out, you know, a time period so that you know that you're always going to test clean, which is what Lance did, right? And before what they did at Sochi, what Russia was doing was similar in this capacity, except it was more advanced.
They collected urine first before they started taking the drugs.
Yes, they did that too. To cut to Sochi, or what they really developed, is that they had collected a clean urine database. They had about 16,000 clean urine samples, not only from Russian athletes, but from athletes from all over the world that had come to compete in Russia. And Gregory would keep all these clean urine samples. He had them all analyzed for their steroid profile, what was in them. And so, not even including Sochi, but in Russia, whenever a Russian athlete would compete, what they would do is they would take the clean urine sample, either of that Russian athlete that they had on file, or if they didn't, from another athlete that matched the Russian athlete's profile, and swap out the dirty urine for the clean urine. And this crescendoed in Sochi, where what they did is they had collected the clean urine samples of every single Russian athlete on the national team that were part of the national program about a year earlier. And so they had hundreds of clean urine samples. They're in a KGB vault, an FSV vault, at the Sochi Olympics, across from where the laboratory is. And in the dark of night, Gregory and his team are smuggling out the dirty urine samples from the Russian athletes that had competed that day, having these bottles opened, which these are impenetrable bottles, by the KGB, by the FSB, dumping out the dirty urine and swapping back in the clean urine of that Russian athlete, and then adjusting the gravity of the urine so it will never be detected. And they did this for several hundred urine samples at Sochi, and Russia ended up sweeping the medals count.
My guest is Brian Fogel, whose film Icarus opens at the IFC Center, Greenwich Village, today. Also will be available on Netflix starting today. And so you started making this film before the Sochi scandal was exposed.
Absolutely.
How did the German documentary filmmakers learn of Russia's doping scheme? They made a movie called How Russia Makes Its Winners. That was the first to expose the scandal.
Yeah, well, it was that's kind of a strange journey. So Hajo Seppet, the German documentary TV filmmaker, comes out with this piece in December 2014. But it's based on these two Russian whistleblowers, the Stepanovs, that had fled Russia. One was an Olympic runner. Her husband was working for RUSADA. And they go to Hajo Seppet, the journalist, and tell him that this has been going on, that there is this state-sponsored program. So Hajo runs with this television show, and it has enough in it that WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, launches an investigation into the claims put forward in this TV show. This investigation goes on for 11 months. And at the end of this 11 months, in November of 2015, WADA releases this 335-page report. But the report is limited to track and field only. That's their mandate. And part of this 335-page report, 70 pages of it, is alleging that Gregory Rodchenkov, my guy, is the mastermind of this entire system. But again, the report is like a smoking gun. It's not the bullets. It's not the body. It's not the graveyard. It's not the evidence. But it's enough that WADA suspends the laboratory. Gregory is forced to resign from the laboratory. And the IAAF, the International Athletics Federation, Sebastian Coe, suspends Russia provisionally from all world and track events. And this sets off the next part of this scandal, where Gregory, having resigned from the lab, now has two FSB agents living in his home, and he's being told that they are planning his suicide. And in a period of about 4 or 5 days of us Skyping, after this scandal breaks, Gregory tells me that he needs to escape and that they're going to kill him. And I buy him a plane ticket, and we get him to Los Angeles.
And others have died. But yes. Vladimir Putin has commented on this, said it's all of this is a bunch of lies, and so has Vitaly Mutko, Russia's sports minister.
That's right. What we've seen in the amazing fallout of this is the investigation that was launched because of what we brought to the New York Times, what Gregory and I brought to the New York Times, and then what was part of a much larger investigation, said that beyond a reasonable doubt, that with absolute certainty that this scandal happened, and not only that, there was 1,666 documents of evidence plus forensic science which corroborated and proved everything that Gregory brought forward. And yet Vitaly Mutko has emphatically denied it, as well as Putin. And not only that, when the scandal happened, instead of firing Mutko, who's the sports minister, who is Putin's best friend, childhood friend, Putin takes him out of harm's way and elevates him to the deputy prime minister of Russia, essentially the vice president of Russia. And to this day, Russia has accepted no responsibility for this scandal and is still trying to blame the whole thing on Gregory.
And he became more and more fearful for his own life as he learned about what happened to a number of, well, a friend and co-worker, Nikita Kamayev. He is now under witness protection program?
Protective custody. So in February, there were only two, three guys on planet Earth that had this information, that had this evidence. The two guys who had the evidence in Russia, both of them died under mysterious circumstances, heart attacks, within 2 weeks of each other in February. And Gregory, who fled to the U.S., is alive, and he is under U.S. protective custody.
Were you surprised that the International Olympic Committee decided not to enforce a total ban for Russian athletes at the Rio Olympics?
It was, to me, it was breathtaking. You know, what happened is Richard McLaren, who led the investigation based on Gregory's evidence, shows to the Olympics that everything that had been put forward was true. And he presents them with all the evidence, and I knew this evidence firsthand because I had been living this. Thomas Bach had sent me and Gregory three letters personally. Thomas Bach is the president of the IOC, and each of these letters said, we have full faith in Richard McLaren, and whatever Richard McLaren advises us to do, we will do. So Richard McLaren releases the report. WADA demands that Russia be banned from the Rio Olympics, and pretty much every journalist and publication on planet Earth says that Russia should be banned from the Rio Olympics. And Thomas Bach, in spectacular fashion, punts the ball to the sports federations, refuses to ban Russia from the Rio Olympics, and we get a clear window into the amount of corruption and fraud within the IOC that would allow this scandal to go unpunished.
Sundance has created the Orwell Award for, quote, an era of post-truth, doublespeak, and alternative facts. Did they create it so they could give a special award to your film?
Yes.
And Orwell's 1984, Rodchenko reads portions of it throughout the film. It's one of his favorite books. But why did you call your film Icarus? Has anyone flown too close to the sun?
You know, it's funny. I came up with the name Icarus before I ever shot a piece of footage. And that was based on what I saw as the story of Lance, which is this guy who could have gotten away with it 7 million times, but he just kept pushing the boundaries. He sued people. He went after people in media. He didn't extend friendship to teammates who had doped and who had protected him and then served suspensions. He went after people in courts of law. He attacked David Walsh. The stories go on and on and on. And so he pushed the boundary, which is the Greek myth, which is you can fly, but if you just keep going too high to the sun, you crash and burn. So that's where I came up with that title, but it turned out to be a metaphor for everything in the movie, and certainly this Russia scandal, and certainly what we're seeing in world geopolitics right now in terms of Russia and the U.S. administration.
And congratulations on the response to the film, which really does function as a thriller. You couldn't have known. Brian Fogel's Icarus opens at the IFC Center today and can also be seen on Netflix. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having me.